distinguished visitors, welcome to this meeting of the ADHOC committee. We are still dealing with the presentations on the bill, and we are still in the process of familiarizing the members with the contents of the bill. Just before we get down to that, there's been apologies from the Honourable Drodlo, the Honourable Dulanga, the Honourable Sedunza, and the Honourable Mento. I've just been told that they have apologized that they would not be able to be here. I don't have the details. See, the Honourable Mento is tasked with some other parliamentary work. There is a written letter. The Honourable Dulanga, I know, is out of the country. I think he's presently in Uganda, also on parliamentary work. And there is a letter to that effect. The Honourable Sedunza, she is also attending a meeting on international relations, and this meeting is clashing with that meeting. Those details of the apologies, just by way of where we're going now, there will be one more meeting. We were scheduled to have two meetings next week. Unfortunately, the parliamentary program is finishing on Thursday, and Friday seems not to be an appropriate day to meet. There's also chairperson's meetings on the Friday. But we did schedule, if you looked at the draft program, you'd see that the meeting was scheduled for Tuesday, the 1st of June. And that meeting is still going to take place. I have requested the minister to present on the information peddlers next week. We are hoping that a team would be available to come and present to the meeting on the aspects of information peddling, which is part of the reasons, not the entire reason, but part of the reasons that motivated the implementation of this bill. We will also then also finish the balance of the work which the drafters are trying to do today. They've divided the bill into two. I think they would be going to section 25 today, and the balance of that work of the bill will be dealt with next week. And it will just be an introduction to the clause by clause. We will not be looking at each individual clause and each individual subsection. That we will do once we have had the public hearings, and again for your information, the submissions, written submissions from any interested parties close on 12 noon on the 25th of June. There will be a shortlisting process that will take place, and we will probably have to meet as a committee during the recess period. The recess period runs up until, I think, the 20th of July when Parliament starts again. But in between the 25th of June and that period, the 20th of July when Parliament meets again, we will have to meet to finalize the shortlisting, because the public hearings, as things are scheduled to take place on the, I think it's the 21st and the 22nd of July, and if necessary also on the 23rd. Those dates at the moment are written down and they are almost finalized. We have also advertised that public hearings will take place on that, on those dates. So the only outstanding meeting that we have to still schedule is the one that where the shortlisting is going to take place, which will have to be in the recess period. Honourable members, that by way of information. Today, we, as I said earlier, we'll be dealing with the poll on a clause-by-clause basis, but again, just information purposes, introducing the members to the poll. And as I say, the thinking behind the process is that the honourable members need to be very familiar with the bill so that if there is something in the bill that you feel needs to be changed, it is based on the understanding that you do understand what is in the bill, because logic says that you cannot change something that you don't understand. But it has been a practice, and we have seen this in the past, that where something doesn't make sense to the committee, it is excluded on the basis that it's not understood. And I would want rather that my honourable members are very familiar with what is in the bill, so that if, when it comes to really deliberating on the bill, that the honourable members understand. So we are taking this process quite slowly, and the task team has been asked again to go through the bill from the beginning now, and they will give us some indication of what we'll go through on the session. If all goes well, we should be finished just after 11, depending on the clauses. So those of you that have got bookings, you don't have to go and change it. If you have ever booked to leave at 10, I doubt we will be finished by 10. Over to the drafters then. Unless there's any questions, I see the Honourable Gabadelli.
A small thing, it's about attendance and apologies. Can we task you to check about Honourable Matasa, whether it will, I won't continue, but check about him so that they can do whatever the replacement.
Thanks. Strangely enough, he did send an apology. I think it was for last week, and I wasn't sure why he was, because my understanding is that he has been redeployed, but we will look into that. Jan Wilmania?
Thank you, Chair. You covered the question of a briefing by the Minister. Have you arranged, or do you share my view that it may be necessary to ask the Minister to brief this committee on the implementability of this bill and the implications? I was slightly taken aback to read that on the last page of the bill that the financial implications of the bill, for example, there are no financial implications. I mean, it seems to me to actually implement this bill, given the fact that it the bill or responsibilities range across all organs of state. There would be some fairly significant implications, and we would have to satisfy ourselves that in fact the department has the capacity to implement the provisions of the bill. The other question is, will we be provided with research that would look at this bill in comparative perspective? Similar pieces of legislation, similar concepts, in other countries that might be relevant. I think both those briefings and the research would be very useful to this committee.
Honourable Mania, the points have been noted and will be taken up. It will be advised next week. Yes, the Honourable Kutsi.
Mr. Chair, I'm speaking on a correction. I did discuss with you, but I think you also mentioned it last week, that a document has been prepared on the comparison about the current state of the bill, comparing it with how the issue was tabled in 2008. When can we expect that document?
Honourable Kutsi, I think you can have that document by Monday if you are here. It is available. I just had it on my desk, and there was a query that I had in it where the drafters were not sure of something, and I just needed to explain to them. It had to do with the definition. It wasn't something serious, and I wanted to do it to change. I think the point was they couldn't understand why me just get the clause. I think it was the minister being described as the president or something to that effect in the definition clause, and they couldn't understand why. Let me just see. Yeah, in the poll, the minister is defined, means the president or the member of cabinet. And I just needed to explain it. Because they didn't give an answer for that. And I just need to explain what it actually meant so that the document is not flawed in that sense. Can we go ahead now, Honourable Members? Then over to the drafters, and you've read our time limits. But over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome to everyone. Subsequent to our prior briefings, what we have decided to do is just to give a sense of appreciation and a way in order to read the bill in its entirety and to give you further direction if there's any areas of contention or if there's any matters that are important to you, how to go about looking for it in the bill and what it actually covers. Basically, what we have done when we had begun drafting this actual bill, we tried to make it chapter by chapter, where it will make it much more easier to actually allocate or locate specific types of information. The bill consists of 13 chapters, where we start off with chapter 1, which deals with definitions, objects, and application of the Act. Now, this is vital for the general understanding of the whole Act, because there's reference made to various definitions, which will then give a sense of appreciation of what we are trying to achieve. Then we go on to the objects of the Act, which talks about what is the basis that we have developed this Act on. And we then go on to the application of the Act. Chapter 2, in essence, talks about the general principles of state information. It defines and it goes further in depth into what state information is, protected information, and general principles of state information. We then go on to Chapter 3, which deals with national information security standards and procedures, and departmental procedures and policies. Now, this is important for the organs of state when it comes in with regard to the policies and procedures relating to this sensitive type of information. National standards and procedures are to be developed by the minister, while departmental policies and procedures will be guided by these national standards. So we're not trying to be too prescriptive on departmental policies. We then move on to Chapter 4, which deals with information that requires protection against alteration, destruction, or loss. Now, this is also a very important chapter. What this chapter covers in Clause 9 and 10 is basically the process of determining what information is valuable and the protection of valuable information. We then move on to Chapter 5, which describes information which requires protection against disclosure. And I think this is also a very vital section in this part. It comprises of two parts, which is Part A that describes sensitive information, and we go into the concept of national interests of the Republic, and Part B, which describes commercial information and what is the nature of commercial information. We move on to Chapter 6, which is basically the crux behind the classification and declassification of documentation. And this sets up the criteria and the rules relating to classification and methods. So it's also divided into two parts, which talks about Part A, which is classification, which covers the nature of classified information, the method of classifying information, classification levels, the authority to classify information, directions for classification, and the report and return of classified documents. Part B talks goes into the declassification process, which under this section deals with the authority to declassify information and maximum protection periods. Chapter 7 goes it addresses the criteria of continued classification of information. This will become more apparent when we go into the status review process, which will give you a better understanding of when a document deems to be or needs to be classified further, or must it be downgraded or be transferred to the National Archives and becomes a public document. Under this chapter, we deal with the continued classification of information, regular reviews of classified information, the request for status reviews and classified information. This particular section deals with any member, organ of state or organization that requires a document to be reviewed by the head of organ of state, which claims that maybe the document is overclassified, and it sets out what the procedure with regard thereto. Then section 24 deals with the status review process, which goes into the actual methodology of what the status review is about. And subsequent to that, section 25 deals with the appeal procedure. If a party is not happy with the results that was furnished upon the request, there is a method or there is avenue for this person to appeal that decision. We then move on to chapter 8, which deals with the transfer of records to National Archives. Now, this particular section deals with documents that have, after the status review, have been declassified and transferred to the National Archives, which will be part of National Declassification Database, which will become public information. Now, the thing that we are trying to achieve with this particular part is, currently we need to look at documents that are unnecessarily classified, and we have to do a status review on those particular documents and make it available to the public. We deal with Chapter 9, which goes more into detail with what I've just mentioned. It relates to the processes relating to the release of declassified information to the public, the request for classified information in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, the establishment of a national declassification database. Then we move on to Chapter 10, which relates to the implementation and monitoring of the law, the responsibility of the State Security Agency, and also dispute resolution. If there is a government department or if there's any dispute arising, there are mechanisms in the bill which address these particular issues. We come then to Chapter 11, which is a very important chapter in the bill, which deals with offences and penalties. Now, these offences and penalties, they carry a minimum sentence. What we have tried to achieve in this bill is to obtain successful prosecution on these following areas and also provide guidelines on how to regulate this area. The offences and penalties contained in this chapter deals with espionage offences, hostile activity offences, harboring or concealing of a person related to any of the offences, the interception of or interference of classified information, the registration of intelligence agents and related offences, attempt, conspiracy, and inducement to commit any of the offences, disclosure of classified or related information, the failure to report possession of classified information, the provision of false information to a national intelligence structure, the destruction of valuable information, improper classification of information, and prohibition of a disclosure of a state security matter, and basically the it also goes on to deal with the extraterritorial application of the Act, and also gives direction with regard to what are the duties of the National Director of Public Prosecution for the institution of these criminal proceedings. Now, this particular section, it's not very technical, but it sets out the grounds on which information peddlers and those that are going to cause damage to the state will try to achieve in disclosing any information that they are not authorized to do so or cause any harm to any of its citizens of the Republic. To supplement that, we have a Chapter 12, which also deals with protection of information in courts. Now, last week's briefing, we went into some detail on how this process works. We go on to Chapter 13, which is the final chapter, which relates to reports that need to be consistently forwarded to the minister. You have to deal with regulations to supplement this bill. Then we deal with transitional provisions, the repeal of laws, and one of the main objectives is to repeal the existing Protection of Information Act, which is outdated and basically contains some unconstitutional provisions therein. And the last chapter will be dealing with the short title and commencement of the bill. Now, that is basically a brief overview of how the bill is structured. Just to give you a sense of appreciation of what we have tried to achieve, we try to give a clear indication of how these matters need to be dealt with, and we have decided to categorize it into these following chapters. Now, what we're going to do in the interim, we go to chapter by chapter, section by section, just to read it out as it is in the bill and try to give a sense of understanding of what we have tried to achieve. Especially when it comes to drafting these legalese and these jargons that are contained in the bill, it makes it hard or difficult sometimes for just a layperson to read it and make sense of what the bill is. However, if you have to go to court and if you have to present to a judge or magistrate, you can't use the loose terms. You have to use the correct terminology and also look at the context under which this bill was drafted and what the intention of the legislature is. You look at all the definitions, how it ties in with that particular section. How does one section affect the next section? You will look into this bill. There's various cross-references or reference from one section to another. The purpose of that is because the section that we are referring to provides the guidelines and the criteria that needs to be applied in the situation. So I would first start off with Clause 2, which deals with the objects of the Act. And what it reads as currently in the bill starts off with Clause 2. The objects of this Act are to A. Regulate the manner in which the state information may be protected. B. Promote transparency and accountability. C will be to establish general principles in terms of which state information may be handled. I'm just going to paraphrase through this and just capture the essence of what is in these sections. D provides for a thorough and methodological approach to the determination of which state information may be protected. And when you're reading the section, you must always keep these particular sections when you're interpreting what the further sections are to come into the bill. Provide a regulatory framework in terms of which protected information is safeguarded in terms of this Act. Define the nature and categories of information that may be protected from destruction, loss, or unlawful disclosure. Provide for the declassification and classification of information. Create a system for review or status of a classified information by ways of regular reviews, requests for review. Regulate the accessibility of declassified information to the public. Harmonize the implementation of this Act with the Promotion of Access to Information Act and the National Archives and Records Services Act. To establish a national declassification database of declassified information that will be made accessible to the members of the public. To criminalize espionage and activities that are hostile to the Republic and provide for certain other offenses and penalties. And the main aim here is also to repeal the current Protection of Information Act. So these are basically the point of departure that the bill tries to attain later on, as you see, in conjunction with the brief overview that I've given you of the structure of the bill. We then go on to the application of the Act, and this deals essentially with that the Act applies to all organs of state, all juristic and national persons. And it also goes on to a subclause where it says that the minister, on good cause shown, and on such terms and conditions as the minister may deem, may by notice in the Gazette, which is reference to the Government Gazette, exempt an organ of state or group or class or organ of state from the application of the duty to establish departmental standards and procedures in terms of Section 8. Now, as I previously mentioned, we see that there's lots of cross-reference. And if you go to Section 8, it deals with the head of each organ of state must establish departmental policies, directives, and categories for classifying, downgrading, and declassifying information, and protection against loss, destruction, and unlawful disclosure of information created, acquired, or received by that organ of state. Departmental policies and directives must not be inconsistent with the national information security standards as prescribed in terms of Section 7. Each organ of state must establish departmental policies, directives, and categories in terms of subsection 1 within 18 months of the commencement of this Act. Now, Section 8 makes reference to Section 7, which talks about the national standards to be developed by the minister. And that section reads as follows. Just a brief overview. The national standards and procedure. The minister must, within 12 months of the commencement of this Act, prescribe broad categories and subcategories of information that may be classified, downgraded, declassified, and protected against destruction, alteration, and loss. Prescribe categories and subcategories of information that may not be protected in terms of this Act. So, you see, there is a balance that we have created in this particular section. To prescribe national information security standards and procedures for the categorization, classification, downgrading, declassification of information. And that the national information security standards referred to above will include, but it's not limited to, organization and administration of information security matters at organs of state, personnel security including the training, awareness, and security screening, information and communication technology security, physical security for the protection of information in consultation with the Minister of Police, and continuity planning. Before the Minister prescribes any category of information in terms of this subsection, the Minister must, by notice in the Government Gazette, provide an opportunity of organs of state and other interested persons to submit comments in respect of the categorization in question. May take into account any comments received as a result of the notice contemplated in the paragraph A above. And subsection 2 applies to any modification to the category of information prescribed in the section, meaning if it deals with the downgrading of any particular document. No measure taken under this section may impede or prevent the National Archives or any other archives from preserving and managing public records in terms of the National Archives Records Service Act. So that was just a brief example of how you have some cross-referencing in the bill, because we are, if you notice, we're still at Section 3 of the bill, application of the Act. So when they make a reference to a particular subsection, it's preferable that you do read that subsection first and then come back to the application of the Act, and it gives you a better clear understanding of how the procedures are set out. So what we then decide to do is if you go back and you read that after I've just mentioned Section 7 and 8 and read subsection 2 again, the minister on good cause shown and on such terms and conditions as the minister may determine, may by notice in the Gazette exempt any organ of state or group or class trump the application or duty to establish departmental standards and policies in terms of Section 8. And as you have seen, that sets out what departmental policies and what the national information security standards are for. Minister may also grant to any organ of state an extension of 18 months for the period referred to in subsection 23.5. Now, if you go into 23.5, reads, and just also when you are reading the bill, you'll always have a first part that deals with a particular section, and then you'll have the subsections. But you must always read the first line of the sentence. For example, at the request 23.1, at the request of for the declassification of classified information, may be submitted to the head of organ of state. Before I proceed, Section 23 deals with the request for status review of classified information. At the request for the declassification of classified information, may be submitted to the head of organ of state by an interested non-governmental party or person. Now, that is very important here because it's not restrictive to any person. Such a request must be in furtherance of a genuine research interest or legitimate public interest. In conducting such a review, the head of organ of state must take into account the considerations for continued classification of information contemplated in this chapter. The heads of organ of state must, in departmental standards and procedures, A, develop procedures to process requests for the review of classified status of a specific information, M, to provide the notification to the requester of the right of appeal, of the right to appeal a decision provided to in Section 25, which is the appeals procedure. The procedure referred to in subsection 4A must be implemented within 18 months of the date of that this Act takes effect. In response to requests for review, the classified status of information in terms of this Act, the head of organ of state may refuse or confirm or deny the existence or non-existence of the information whenever the fact of the existence or non-existence of it is classified as top secret. We then go on to 24, which is the status review process and the appeal process. This will give you a better understanding when we go back to Section 3. The status review procedure. A request for review of the classified status of information must describe the documents or materials containing the information, or describe the category or subject matter of the information with sufficient clarity to enable the head of organ of state to locate it with ease. The head of organ of state receiving a request in the prescribed manner for a review of status of classified information must make a determination in the case of a refusal and provide reasons within 90 days of date of receipt of such request. The appeals procedure deals with if a head of organ of state denies a request for declassification or the lifting of the status of information to a member of the public or non-governmental organization or entity, such person or body may appeal such decision to the minister of the organ of state in question. So these are processes that are available to anybody that has refused a request. Any appeal referred to in this Section 25 must be lodged within 30 days of receipt of the decision and reasons therefore. Upon receipt of the appeal, the minister of the organ of state must make a finding in the case of refusal and provide reasons within 90 days of date of receipt of the request. So we will go back to Section 3, which deals with all how this Act is to be applied. So we have then went into chapter to grant an organ of state an extension of 18 months referred to in subsection 23.5, exempt an organ of state from declassifying information before such information is transferred to the National Archives or other archives in terms of Section 26, which we have read previously. Exempt an organ of state from Section 31 insofar that as authorities and section authorizes the agency to carry out on-site inspections and reviews for the purposes of monitoring and protection of information programs. Now, if you go to Section 31, 30 sub 1, here we deal with the implementation and monitoring, the responsibility of the agency. The agency is responsible for ensuring implementation of protection of information practices and programs in terms of this Act in all organs of state and government entities, including monitoring of national protection information policies and programs carried out by organs of state, on-site inspection and reviews for the purpose of monitoring protection and information program, the provision of an expert support and advice to the organs of state that requires assistance for the handling and request for a review of the status of classified information, ministers who require assistance in the determination of appeals in terms of Section 35 that we went through, making recommendations to heads of organ of state and ministers based on these findings. The agency must provide the following guidance in support of organs of state, excluding the South African Police Services and South African National Defence Force. Development, coordination and support, the facilitation of the implementation of national policies and efficient, cost-effective and consistent manner across all organs of state. The promotion of partnerships with organs of state and enhancement of cooperation between different departments. The provision of expert support advice to organs of state which require assistance in the classification or declassification of information, and carrying out regular reviews of classified information. Identification and exploration of best departmental practices, development of education materials and the running of training and awareness programs, the creation of pilot projects to develop new methodologies to facilitate streamlined programs, the exploration of use of technology to facilitate the declassification process, and supplying annual reports to the minister. So as you would see, when you go through the application of the Act, it gives you a sense of understanding before you go in depth to the technical aspects. It refers you to all the various sections. And when you're done reading that, and when you start with the bill from the important section, like what is state information, what is protected information, general principles of state information, you are already aware of the procedures that are contained in the book and what options you have, like, for example, the status review and your appeal processes and the manner in which you can request a document to be reviewed. So we then go on to sub 3, which deals with the minister on request made by, on his or her own accord, or on the request made by the organ of state, may by notice in the Gazette determine that an organ of state is to be regarded as part of another organ of state. Determine that the category of information of state is to be regarded as one organ of state, which the head of organ of state, as the minister, specifies. And there is doubt, if there is doubt as to whether an organ of state is separate organ of state or a state that forms part of another organ of state, to determine that the organ of state is a separate organ of state or forms part of another organ of state. Now, this case is for, as you all are aware, since the last elections, there have been some organs of state that have been separated for their different capacities. There have been a combination of certain organs of state. So this also caters for that particular aspect. So in the event if a new organ of state has been established, then this Act will also cover that particular organ of state. We then deal on to Chapter 2. what's with
the... Sorry, can you just hold it for a minute? We don't want to saturate the members. It is after all a Friday. And Bafana Bafana did win last night. So let's not overcrowd the members here. Can I just check whether the honourable members perhaps want to intervene with questions for clarification? I recognise the honourable Van Wyk.
Section now, but it, where you refer to the responsibility in terms of physical security and the responsibility of such. What do you envisage there in terms of different departments? I just wanted clarity in terms of, you know, what is envisaged for that? Do we expect the police to provide security for all these classified information? Do you expect them to be part of the determining the standards of it, of how it's kept? I just want to have some clarity on it.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the physical security, as we previously mentioned, I'll just find you the correct section. It deals with sub D, physical security for the protection of information in consultation with the Minister of Police. Now, the National Information Security Standard, in that sub 2, basically this will be in consultation, they will develop what the policies are going to be, so it will be applied as a standard policy across all departments. So because the police also deals with all these sensitive types of information, especially with the crime intelligence and all this with their intelligence wing, because they form part of the cluster, so we have decided to do it in consultation, so we have a common understanding and we don't have a difference of opinion on this particular area. So we also try to standardize between all organs of state that, as you know, there are some organs of state that deal with matters differently because there's no national guidelines that support them. So often you have people having conflicting procedures relating to the same particular matter. And when we do interact, our policies are different, and it causes a bit of conflict. So that is the purpose behind it. Thank you.
The honourable member.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get to the scope of implementation. The bill applies to organs of state, and organs of state are defined in the bill. Could you give us some idea of how many organs of state there are?
Including the parastatals, there are a total of 140. So how I've come to this knowledge, because it's part of our in our intelligence environment when we conduct screening and vetting, we service all these particular departments and organs of state.
I would add plus minus, Mr. Amabu could see.
Thank you, Chair. On the answer regarding the determination of the physical security, in some other cases they're also talking about policies by organs of state. Did I understand correctly that there will be and sort of a guidelines in the determination of these policies? And and my another question is, who's going to sort of be responsible for drawing up the policy or the guidelines for such a kind of policy?
Thank you, Honourable Member. The concept of the National Information Security Standard, that will be developed by the Minister. It will serve as a guideline to other governmental departments, because sometimes if you see there are some exemptions that are contained in, And we alluded to the fact last week that some departments don't actually, like sports and recreation, you don't have to have strict guidelines because of the documents that they are dealing with. So we can, it allows for, on a national sense, you have the guidelines, which will then would guide the particular needs of the different organs of state or departments. But it will be done in consultation with us to see that it doesn't contradict what the national guidelines are. So that particular organ of state or the minister also has the option that we just went through now, say that, listen, we are not sure about this particular area. How do we regulate it? And the agency will provide that service to them to guide them to say, okay, you are not dealing with so much of classified information. Let's only leave it to your trade secrets or matters of national interest, while your general admin work where you deal with a request for, say for example, your service providers, what they provide to you, that doesn't need to be classified. So in essence, what happens is that the National Information Security Standard will replace the existing Minimum Information Security Standard, which is just a cabinet memo, provide further guidelines on how the classification levels, what type of documents need to be regulated, how do you transfer those documents from one department to another if they request it. If a person is working with a classified document and needs to take it to another meeting, what control mechanisms they are going to have. So that will be the national policies. But the departments will then sit and decide what is, or custom make their own regulations.
Honourable members, look, this is chapter one. We need to go a little bit faster, but if I sum up this chapter one, the important issues here are the definitions. We have asked the staff and the presenters to separate the definitions section from the bill and to give the cross references under each definition. So what we will give you next week is a separate document just with the definitions on it. It will be nicely set out, and under each definition you will get the reference in the bill where the definition where that particular word is used. And what I would urge you is to keep that nearby, so whenever you see valuable information you can immediately just page to your definition. It would be there and you'd be able to see where else in the bill the word is being used. So take that as work done, and you don't have to think too much about that. The next important thing in chapter one, I think, is to understand the object. What is the bill trying to achieve? You know, whether you like it or not, get to understand what the objects are, because all they're very nicely laid out. One of the simple things, it wants to repeal this old act of 1982, the Health Protection of Information Act, amongst other things. So once you understand what the thing is trying to do, it will be easier for you as you go along, because you would then be seen throughout the bill, oh, here are those things that the bill is trying to do, because it would be stupid for a bill to say this is what we intend to do, and then when you come in the bill you don't actually find those things. So you should find all these things that the objects are referring to. It should be in the bullseye. The second part of chapter one, the application, I think it's a simple thing to understand. There are issues there that seem to be complicated, but in the bottom line is it's supposed to, as things stand, it applies to organs of state. There are exemptions and so on. But I don't think you need to get too much involved in where it's going to apply at this stage. Because at this stage what we really want you to do is to understand what's going on in the book. From a chapter one point of view, the definitions, we've made it nice and easy for you, so don't go and memorize it. From the objects point of view, that's where the crux of the bill is. Once you get your mind into the objects, if you want to memorize something, memorize that, because then you will have a clear understanding what the bill is trying to do, and you would be find it very easy when you go through the bill, because you would find those things then in the bill. I think we can go over to the presenters now, maybe just a little bit faster, and also in that type of context now, you know, because when we went The Honourable Ngaba Dali.
Chair, I know you belong to this profession, and I know you'll be faster forward when you think they're slow. That's why you are requesting them to go a bit faster. It makes even worse for some of us. You know, we have said something that is very important, and which I've written some things to ask about. I requested for it last time that the minister, we should be given time to be exposed into, you know, the Christians will tell you the Old Testament and the New Testament. We can't be talking of transformation when we are talking of protection of information. We can't talk of transformation in our country when we don't know the Old Testament and what we left off in the Old Testament and why. It might look minor what I'm telling you, because most of you here studied law. I didn't study law because I hated it. But I now need to know what is it that you left, which was mentioned in the old protection, because there was a protection of information, but that was not useful to the country as holistic. It was useful to a particular section of the country. What is it that has been carried over and why? What is it that has been left over and why? So that one can really do the protection with a certain level of commitment, if not holistical level of commitment. But I'm not finding that, which is easy for me when a friend who is a Christian says, can you go to church? The minister will tell you, in front there as leading the congregation, from the New Testament, this is what is said. From the Old, then we begin to relate what was there in the Old that has been left off and why. I'm not saying let's go and write a protection, having a thick document that is heavy, but it was going to be useful if we can be told of, when we're dealing with chapter 5, for instance, why did we leave? Why did we leave the 1, 2, 3, 4, what was there in chapter 5? So that really we can be together. I know I might be boring, but that's a reality on the ground. Thanks.
Honourable Member, I think what you are saying, and you are saying the right thing, because this is quite a progressive bill, and I think you're looking for why it has moved from this old thing of 1982, which we are trying to get rid of now, and why we have moved into this area, and it is a very, very important aspect of the bill. Because what you're saying is the explanation is not there. And I think we will get to that, because the question really lies when it comes to the section where we say that Act, whatever it is, of 1982 is hereby repealed. The clause that you, the question that you're putting is why are we repealing that thing? What's so bad about that thing? And why did you have to come up with this thing? And you are correct. Perhaps when the minister, hopefully we would have him here next week, and perhaps we would be able to get him. There are certain explanations in the back of the bill now, but I don't think it covers everything that you are asking. But we will carry that information over to the minister, and hopefully if he can be present next week with the presentations that I've mentioned, it would be nice to hear his view on what is actually the real policy and political considerations that went behind having to consider implementing or forwarding such a bill to Parliament. On the point of going fast, it was not meant to cause confusion. I think it was meant to... because I was going to add something to when I said faster. When the presenter went through the chapters, he did highlight certain chapters as being important. And if you look at, for example, chapter 4, chapter 5, and chapter 6, which is chapters that he highlighted as being important. If you take the object clause now that I mentioned, and you look at the objects, what is this bill trying to achieve? And then you go to chapter 4, 5, and 6, and you'll see it's all there in chapter 4, 5, and 6. You know, the main issues that the bill is trying to achieve. So it's merely an attempt to create an environment for the honourable members to become familiar with the bill in a more structured manner than just to go through it clause by clause. You know, so that when you look at this thing, you can open up, and when you forget, you can just go straight to the objects clause, look at what it is, go to chapter 4, 5, and 6, and you'll actually see there all those things. Those are the main issues. There are other issues in the bill. But really, when you talk about protecting information from being disclosed or as one part, and then from being altered and destroyed and against loss, you know, that's where you're going to find the issues. And then how do you protect it? You know, by classification. Those four, five, chapter 4, 5, and 6, that's really where the crux of the matter is. Apart from the offences now, which the presenter also highlighted. So I was going to say, when we go faster, try and link up the objects clause of these chapters so that we don't concentrate on some of the complex things which we're really going to have to apply our minds to, you know. But to do it now is to confuse you. I think if we understand what this thing is trying to do is the more important thing to come to terms with. What is this bill trying to do? And how is it trying to do it? So, honourable member, I wasn't trying to rush and disadvantage those people that don't have a legal background. But let's leave it up to the presenters and see how they feel. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, also I'd like to contribute this one to honourable members, if possible, because cross-references are being made. You make notes of those cross-references because the presenter is also explaining those sections so that you may find out that there will be no need in future also to go back to that section, or only to go to that section if maybe it has not been explained out. Just request members, maybe if they have gotten notes, when there is cross-reference and it is explained at the same time under a section, a certain section, to be noted. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So far we have covered 10 sections, Chair, just by manner of cross-referencing. So it's coming now onto the information part. What is information? And our previous briefings gave a sense of understanding of this. So I will just go through it. And we then start off with Chapter 2, which deals with the general principles of state information. Section 4 states that state information may, in terms of this Act, be protected against unlawful disclosure, destruction, alteration, and loss. Now, this actually goes to the crux of it, because more often than not, protected state information is unlawfully disclosed, which causes harm to the state organization or to citizens of its country, or the destruction or alteration or loss thereof also contributes towards that. Protected information is clause 5, which states that state information which requires protection against unlawful alteration, destruction, or loss is referred to as valuable information. State information in material or documented form which requires protection against unlawful disclosure may be protected by way of classification, and access to such information may be restricted to certain individuals who carry and commensurate security clearance. Now that section deals with people who are given the necessary security clearance to be in possession of the documents, or people that are not in possession of any security clearance, but deals with this very classified information. The general principles of state information, as you can see, we then go further to give a type of a guideline. And clause 6 reads, the following principles underpin this Act and inform its implementation and interpretation. Unless restricted by any law or by justifiable public or private consideration, state information should be available and accessible to all persons. Information that is accessible to all is the basis of a transparent, open and democratic society. Access to the information is a basic human right and promotes human dignity, freedom and the achievement of equality. A free flow of information promotes openness, responsiveness, informed debate, accountability and good governance. The free flow of information can promote safety and security. Accessible information builds knowledge and understanding and promotes creativity, education, research, the exchange of ideas and economic growth. Some confidentiality and secrecy is however vital to save lives, to enhance, to protect the freedom and security of persons, to bring criminals to justice, and to protect the national security and engage in effective government and diplomacy. Measures to protect state information should not infringe unduly on personal rights and liberties or make the rights and liberties of citizens unduly dependent on administrative decisions. And measures taken in terms of this Act must have regard to the freedom of expression, the right of access to information, and other rights of freedoms enshrined in the Bill of Rights, and be consistent with Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and have regard to South Africa's international obligations. The important paragraph here is sub J, which reads, paragraph A to I, which I have just read out, are subject to the security of the Republic, in that the national security and the Republic may not be compromised. We then go on to chapter 3, which deals with the national information
security standards. Just 1 minute. Yes,
I would like to ask a question in respect of chapter 2. I would ask that, I'm happy to pose that question whenever you think it's appropriate. Would you like to do it chapter by chapter, or would you like me to hold off?
I think let's hold on, let's take a few chapters and then you can just note your question.
Thank you, Chair. We have covered chapter 3 where we have spoken about the national standards and procedures. We also have covered chapter 8, which deals with the departmental policies and procedures. Chapter 4 deals with information which requires protection against alteration, destruction, or loss. Clause 9 reads as follows. State information must be determined as valuable when that information is identified in terms of a prescribed procedure or policy as information that should be protected from destruction and loss. Items of valuable information and files must be entered into a departmental register of valuable information. Items of information of state information may be determined as valuable in advance. When state information is categorized as valuable, all individual items or information that fall within a valuable category are automatically deemed to be valuable. This is, for example, you have your main documents and you have addendums or any other correspondence that relates to the matter that is attached to the document. The protection of valuable information, which is clause 10, which says that valuable information warrants a degree of protection and administrative control and must be handled with due care and only in accordance with authorized procedures. Valuable information need not be specifically marked, but the holders of such information must be made aware of the need for controls and protection as set out in the regulations. The destruction of public records is subject to the National Archives and Records Act. And then we move on to
chapter 5. Can we take those chapters then before we go to chapter 5? And let us take some questions for clarity on those chapters. Honourable Mania, you can put your question
in. Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. Well, in fact, I have one question and then a comment. The question relates to Chapter 2. Can you explain why state information, which requires protection, why is that not referred to as protected information? Simple. Rather than having valuable information which then needs to be protected. It strikes me as clunky drafting. But be that as it may. Second question, just to note, Chair, I think the Minister of Finance would be delighted that the Department of State Security are pioneering economic theory. I would suggest that there's in fact no relationship between access to information and economic growth, and would postulate that if the National Intelligence Agency gave the public access to every single document in their possession, there would be no increase in economic growth.
These are the general principles. It's all very theoretical and philosophical, so I don't know how much you want to get too serious about it. But let's hear what the drafters say. I think what the bill is really trying to say here is we're trying to be nice, we're not trying to be oppressive. You know, we are familiar and we are aware of all the constitutional rights and the Bill of Rights and things like that, and we mustn't be secret. And these are the things that we must take into consideration, including your concern about the Minister of Finance. But let's hear the drafters, they have a query and comment.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, with regard to the terminology, valuable information and state information that requires protection. Now, we also have a category that deals with personal information, which is not actually state information. And that is why we have decided to call it valuable information when it relates to the state information. But, you know, we can seek guidance from the committee on this particular matter. But we still maintain that we have to have this valuable information, this further categorization of what protected information is. With regard to all these principles set out in 6, we are not being, as the Chairperson correctly mentioned, we have looked at all possible implications, how it's going to be guided, sometimes with the economic code. You do have sensitive information that relates to that particular area. So we still maintain that this area's Chapter 6 is basically a guideline which provides us to say that, yes, we do acknowledge the provisions in the Constitution, open and democratic South Africa. However, we still maintain, on the other hand, that there are certain information that mandatorily needs protection. So, Chair, that will be our submission.
Can we go on? No further questions, clarity? Proceed.
Chair, as we mentioned, we went into the protection of valuable information, which is Chapter 4. We now deal with Chapter 5, which basically deals with information which requires protection against disclosure. Now, it's split up into two sections, which is a Part A, which is sensitive information, and Part B. Sensitive information, it's titled National Interest of the Republic. 11, the national interest of the Republic includes, but is not limited to, all matters relating to the advancement of public good, and all matters relating to the protection and preservation of all things owned or maintained by the public, by the state. The national interest is multifaceted and includes the survival and security of the state and the people of South Africa, and the monetary system and sound international relations. And matters of national interest include security from all forms of crime, protection against attacks or incursions on the Republic, or acts of foreign interference, defense and security plans and operations, details of criminal investigations and police and law enforcement methods, significant political and economic relations with international organizations and foreign governments, economic, scientific, and technological matters vital to the Republic's stability, security, integrity, and development, and all matters that are subject to mandatory protection in terms of Section 34 to 42 in the Promotion of Access to Information Act, whether in classified form or not. The determination of what is the national interest of the Republic must at all times be guided by the values referred to in Section 1 of the Constitution. Part B deals with commercial information. We go on to what is the nature of commercial information. Commercial information becomes a subject matter of possible protection from disclosure under the following circumstances. Where the commercial information of an organ of state or information which has been given by an organization, firm, individual, or to an organ of state or an official representing the state on request or invitation in terms of a statutory or regulatory provision, the disclosure of which will, and the important point here is, would prejudice the commercial, business, financial, industrial interest of the organ of state, organization, or the individual concerned. Information that could endanger the national interests of the Republic. Sub 2 deals with commercial information which may prejudice the commercial, business, or industrial interests of the organization, individual, if disclosed, includes commercial information that is not in the public domain, which if released publicly will cause financial loss or competitive or reputational injury to the organization or individual concerned. Trade secrets, including all confidential processes, operations, styles of work, apparatus, and the identity, amount, or source of income, profit, losses, or expenditures of any person, firm, corporation, or association. Only commercial information which the state is not otherwise authorized by law to release may be protected against disclosure. Government-prepared reports should be protected from disclosure to the extent that they restate classified commercial information. We then move on to Chapter 6, which deals with the classification and declassification of information. These particular chapters sets up the guidelines on how to classify and declassify the information. Nature of classified information, which is clause 13. Classified information is sensitive, commercial or personal information, which is in material or record form, must be protected from unlawful disclosure, and when classified, must be safeguarded according to the degree of harm that could result from this unlawful disclosure. It may be made accessible only to those holding the appropriate security clearance and who have a legitimate need to access the information in order to fulfill their official duties or contractual responsibilities. It is considered to be valuable information that must be protected against destruction and loss and must be classified in terms of Section 15. Now here we have a further cross reference from Section 13 to 15, which talks about the classification level. And in broad terms, we'll go through Section 15 and we'll come back to 14. 15 deals with the three classification levels of confidential, secret, and top secret. Now this section is rather long, and it might be confusing if you don't understand the processes that are involved. But I'll go through it and try to give further clarity on it. Section 15.1 states that state information may be classified as confidential if the information is, firstly, A, sensitive information whereby the unlawful disclosure of which may be harmful to the Republic or security or national interests of the Republic, or could prejudice the Republic in its international relations. Sub B, you have to go back to read the first line again, which says state information may be classified as confidential if the information is commercial information whereby the disclosure of which may cause financial loss to an entity or may prejudice an entity in its relations with clients, competitors, contractors, and suppliers. Sub 2 deals with state information may be classified as secret if the information is A, sensitive information whereby the disclosure may endanger the security of the national interests of the Republic or could jeopardize the international relations of the Republic, or commercial information whereby the disclosure may cause serious financial loss to an entity, or personal information whereby the disclosure may endanger the physical security of a person. Sub 3 deals with state information that may be classified as top secret. If the information is sensitive information whereby the disclosure of which may cause serious or irreparable harm to the national interests of the Republic or may cause states to sever diplomatic relations with the Republic. Or commercial information whereby the disclosure of which may have disastrous results with regard to future existence of an entity or cause serious and irreparable harm to the security interests of the state, and whereby personal information which may endanger the life of an individual concerned. So, the nature of classified information in terms of section 13 relates to the criteria or the guidelines as set out here of the different classification levels in terms of section 15. The method of classifying information. State information is classified by the relevant classification authority in terms of section 17. So from 14 you will then read section 17, which deals with the directions for classification. The direction for classification, for the purposes of classification, this is section 17, classification decisions must be guided by section 21, which also relates to continued classification, which I will then proceed to explain shortly. Secrecy exists to protect the national interest. The classification of information may not, under any circumstances, be used to, and this is very important, conceal an unlawful act, omission, incompetence, inefficiency, or administrative error, restrict access to information in order to limit scrutiny and thereby avoid criticism, prevent embarrassment to a person, organization, organ of state, or agency, unlawfully restrain or lessen competition, or prevent, delay, or obstruct the release of information that does not require protection under this Act. I would just like to mention as well, there is an offense that is contained in the bill which talks about the improper classification of a document where they are trying to conceal all these particular sub 1 to 5 that I've just mentioned. So we have put in a control mechanism into the bill to say that if somebody tries to classify information trying to conceal an unlawful act or omission, he will be liable for an offense. The classification of information is an exceptional measure and should be conducted strictly in accordance with section 11 and 15. We have just went through section 11, which is the national interest, and 15, which is the classification levels. Information is classified only when there is a clear and justifiable and legitimate need to do so, and a demonstrable need to protect the information in the national interest. If there is significant doubt as to whether information requires protection, the matter must be referred to the minister for a decision. The decision to classify information must be based solely on the guidelines and the criteria set out in this Act, the policies and the regulations made in terms of the statutory framework. State information that does not meet the criteria set out in this Act, the regulations and applicable policies may not be classified. The decision to classify may not be based on any extraneous or irrelevant reason. Classification decisions ought to be assessed and weighed against the benefits of secrecy taking into account the following factors: vulnerability of the information, the threat or damage of its disclosure, the risk of loss of the information, the value of the information to adversaries, the cost of protecting the information, and the public benefit to be derived from the release of the information. Scientific and research information not clearly related to national security and national interest may not be classified. Information may not be reclassified after it has been declassified and released to the public under the proper authority. Classification must be in place only for as long as the protection is actually necessary. And where there is still a need for classification, it may be that the information in question no longer requires a high level of classification and should be downgraded. The application of the classification principles may not in any way inhibit or prevent officials from informing authorized officials of such information in order to fulfill law enforcement or intelligence functions authorized or prescribed by law. So we come back to the method of classifying. So we say that we have to look at those particular guiding principles when we're looking at the method of classifying information. So basically the state information is classified by the relevant classification authority in terms of Section 17 when a classification authority has identified information in terms of this Act as information that warrants classification. The items or categories of information classified are marked or indicated with an appropriate classification. And the classified information has been entered into a departmental register of classified information. Items such as files, integral file blocks, file series, or categories of state information may be determined as classified, and all individual items and information that fall within the classified file are considered to be classified. The classification of information is determined through a consideration of the directions as contained in Section 17, which I've mentioned. We then look at the authority to classify information, which is Section 16, and it means that any head or organ of state may classify or reclassify information using classification levels set out in Section 15. The head of organ of state may delegate in writing authority to classify information to a subordinate staff member. Only designated staff members may be given authority to classify information as secret or top secret. Classification decisions must be taken at a sufficiently senior level to ensure that only the information which genuinely requires protection is classified. Items, files, integral file blocks, file series or categories of state information may be determined in the manner contemplated in subsection 1, which is any head of organ of state may classify or reclassify information, as classified in advance, but only by a head of organ of state. When state information is categorized as classified, all individual items of information that fall within this classified category are automatically regarded as classified. As you can see, it's repeated at almost every section that relates to this classified information. We're trying to drive the point that anything that's related to the base document, which carries a restriction level, will also be deemed to be classified. I think we then move on to Section 18, which deals with the report and return of classified records. Now, what we have done here is that, I'll just read it out briefly. A person who is in possession of classified record, knowing that such record has been unlawfully communicated, delivered, or made available other than the manner for the purpose contemplated in this Act, except where such possession is for any purpose and any manner authorized by law, must report such possession and return such record to a member of the South African Police Services or the agency. So what we are doing here in this particular section, if you look at all the principles that we have went through, it's only people that have the necessary classification authority and those that are lawfully to be in possession of the document are allowed to have the document. Now, this particular part also addresses information peddling. So if a person that is not authorized to have the document, we can cause damage or harm to the state, and the repercussions of that will filter down to its citizens. We then go on to Part B, which deals with declassification. And here, what we try to achieve is to say that currently in South Africa, we have a lot of unnecessary documents that are classified. That doesn't warrant any restriction or classification level. So there is going to be a review of the documents prior to it going to the National Archives or the National Declassification Database. The authority to declassify information, Section 19, the organ of state that classifies the information is responsible for its declassification and downgrading. That is very important. The head of organ of state is the declassification authority, but he or she may delegate authority to declassify and downgrade in writing to specific officials within the organ of state. The head of organ of state retains accountability. We must stress the fact about accountability for any decisions taken in terms of such delegated authority. The agency is responsible for handling of classified records and the declassification of such records of a defunct organ of state or agency that has no successor in function. The agency must consult with organs of state or agencies having primary subject matter in their interest before making the final declassification determination. Items, files, integral file blocks, file series, or categories of state information may be determined as declassified, and all individual items of information that fall within such declassified category are considered to be declassified. We then go on to maximum protection periods, which we have mentioned that in accordance with Section 11(2) of the National Archives of South Africa's Act, information may not remain classified for longer than a period of 20 years unless the head of organ of state that classifies the information certifies to the satisfaction of his or her minister, having regard for the criteria contained in Chapter 8. Chapter 8 relates to transfer of national records, records to the National Archives, which will be accessible to the public. Chapter 8, that the continued protection of the information from unlawful disclosure is crucial to the safeguarding of the national security of the Republic, necessary to prevent significant and demonstrable damage to national interest, or necessary to prevent demonstrable physical or life-threatening harm to the person or persons. So this maximum protection period must also be read in light of the status review process, which we will touch on shortly. So you have your maximum protection period, but it doesn't preclude anybody from requesting in terms of the other provision in the bill to say that I am now requesting a document from XYZ organ of state. This is the name of the document and this is what it deals with. And then you have the process where the organ of state will respond to you within the 30 days, and then you've got 90 days to respond. It all depends if you look at the procedure that we have alluded to previously. We then move on to the Chapter 7, which deals for criteria of continued classification of information, and this also relates to the declassification, as I mentioned. So say, for example, after the 20 years, and I think I should rather deal with the status review to give you a better understanding, which is in Section 22, which deals with regular reviews of classified information, which states that at least once every 10 years, the head of organ of state must review the classified status of all classified information held or possessed in that organ of state. The first 10-year period referred to in subsection 1 commences on the effective date of this Act. The status of classified information must be reviewed when there is a need or proposal to use that information in public forum, such as a court or tribunal proceedings. When conducting a review, the head of organ of state must apply the criteria for continued classification of information contemplated in this chapter. Organs of state must inform the minister and the public of results of regular reviews. So we are looking at the maximum protection period, which says that it's 20 years, but you also have regular reviews of classified information. Then we look at the request for status review, which deals with Section 23. A request for the declassification of classified information may be submitted to the head of organ of state by any interested non-governmental party or person. Such a request must be in the furtherance of the genuine or legitimate interest. We have covered this section previously when we went through the objects of the Act, where I went through this whole status review and the appeal procedure. So, as you can see, it's now linking up when you do require access to this particular information. There are procedures that are available to any party that requests it. Section 21 deals with the continued classification of information. As we mentioned, that in taking a decision whether to continue the classification of information, the head of organ of state must consider whether the declassification of classified information is likely to cause significant and demonstrable harm to the national interest of the Republic. Specific considerations may include whether the disclosure may expose the identity of a confidential source or reveal information about application of an intelligence or law enforcement investigative method, or reveal the identity of intelligence or police source when the unlawful disclosure of that source would clearly and demonstrably damage the national interest of the Republic or the interest of the source or his or her family. So we just go through a whole list of guiding principles there, which also deal with whether it clearly and demonstrably impaired the ability of government to protect officials or persons from whom protection services in the interest of the national security are authorized, that which will seriously and substantially impair national security, defense or intelligence systems, plans or activities, seriously and demonstrably impair relations between South Africa and foreign government, and undermine ongoing diplomatic activities of the Republic, or violate a statute, treaty or international agreement, including the agreement between South African government and any other government or international institution, or cause financial loss to a non-state institution, or cause substantial prejudice to such an institution in its relations with its clients, competitors, or cause life-threatening or other physical harm to the person. The Minister, after taking into consideration all aspects as indicated in subsection 2 here, and section 11, which is the national interest, and section 17(1)(i), which deals with the direction for classification, will authorize the classification or the declassification of any category, class, or classified information. So what this does is that you have to look at these three particular sections in order for you as the minister or declassifying authority to apply your mind, taking all these principles into consideration. Once a document has been declassified, it's accordingly then transferred to the National Archives. So this will be termed under Section 26. Chair, with your permission, I know we were supposed to go up to Chapter 25, but we have completed that, but I just want to give the overall picture of the declassification process. And it's just two more sections. So you deal with basically the... what happens is that once a document has been declassified, it is transferred to the National Archives and becomes part of public records, which will be accessible to the public at any time, which reads that the head of organ of state must review the classification of information before it is transferred to the National Archives or other archives established by law. And if you can remember, we have mentioned that once a document has been declassified, it cannot be reclassified. So imposes or gives an onus to the organ of state, the head of organ of state. At the date on which this act takes effect, public records, including records marked classified, that are transferred to the National Archives or other archives, are considered to be automatically declassified. So what we are stating here is that if a government department doesn't conduct the status review of the document before it's transferred to the National Archives, then that document will be regarded as declassified. So we are now trying to impose on government or organs of state to state that this is a serious matter. We need to balance the openness and secrecy. You need to see what documents requires your protection. And you must now assess what goes to the National Archives. It's also a protective mechanism to say that we just can say after the 20-year declassification process or after a status review, we can now give it to the National Archives. They need to apply their mind and consider all the principles that are encapsulated in this bill before it is gone to the National Archives. So what we are stating is that even if a classified document is, once this bill takes place, is transferred to the National Archives, it automatically becomes declassified. The head of organ of state that holds classified records that originated in another organ of state must notify the originating organ of state before transferring classified records to the National Archives or other archives, and abide by the reasonable directions of the originating organ of state. Classified records held by the National Archives or other archives at the commencement of this act, which have been classified for less than 20 years, are subject to the provisions of this act. An organ of state which has transferred classified information to the National Archives or other archives before the commencement of this act retains its responsibility in terms of this act. Where an organ of state fails to act in terms of Part B of Chapter 6, classified records in the possession of the National Archives or other archives are regarded as being automatically declassified at the expiry of the relevant protection period referred to in Section 20. There is no onus or obligation on the part of the National Archives or other archives to advise or notify organs of state of their responsibilities and obligations with regard to classified information in the possession of the National Archives or other archives. We then go on to Section 27, which deals with the release of declassified information to the public. Classified information that is declassified may be available to the public in accordance with this Act, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, and any other law, unless ordered by a court. No classified information may be made available to the public until such information has been declassified. When an organ of state receives a request for records in its possession that contain information that were originally classified by another organ of state, it must refer the request to the pertinent and the pertinent records to that organ of state for processing, and may, after consultation with the other organ of state, inform the requester of the referral. There is no automatic disclosure of declassified information to the public unless the information has been placed into the National Declassification Database as provided for in Section 29. The request of classified information, which is Section 28, deals with that it must be done in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, where the request for the access to classified records that is made of the Promotion of Access to Information must be dealt with in terms of that act. The head of organ of state considering the request for the record which contains classified information must consider the classification and may declassify such information. If the head of organ of state decides to grant access to the requested record, he or she must declassify the classified information before releasing the information. If the refusal to grant access to the classified record is taken on appeal in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, then the relevant appeal authority must consider the classification and may declassify such information. Section 29 basically talks about the establishment of the National Declassification Database, which says that it must be in conjunction with all organs of state that originate classified information, establish a national declassification base. The database is to be known as the National Declassification Database and is located in the National Archives and Records Services of South Africa. The National Archives and Records Services of South Africa is responsible for the management and maintenance of the National Declassification Database. Every head of organ of state must cooperate fully with the National Archives in the establishment and ongoing operation of the National Declassification Database. So, no declassified information may be placed in the National Declassification Database if access to such information may be refused in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Chair, basically we have covered more than what is required, but those are the important issues. It will give you a better sense of appreciation of the bill. And when reading and interpreting the bill, you must not forget to cross-reference. Chapter 10, and it basically, we have made mention of it in the object of the bill. So for next week, what we are going to present on basically is the offenses and penalties and information before the courts, which we have previously mentioned. But as I mentioned last week in the presentation, I will carry the document that I have generated because it's put in a very legalese way in the way that the offenses and penalties is drafted. So I will make that available again. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Members, there we are. I take it you all know now how to classify information and the various categories. I recognize the Honorable Fichler and then the Honorable Mania and then the Honorable Van Beek. Let's just deal with that answer first. You understand what the Honourable Member is asking. You've got your classified information, it's in court now. It should actually be in some form of database. Is the court now also going to have a database or what? I know this is, you're going to deal with this next week, but I think the Honourable Member is on your database. That seems to be faulty now based on some of the information might be in the database of the court.
Thank you, Chair. Just to give a brief background, or maybe just for clarity purposes, you're talking about existing classified information that is before the court. Now, if you look at the processes, there is a transitional phase, and it also makes mention of any other department where the information is at the moment. It places the onus or responsibility on that particular department to know what matters of theirs have been before court or any other forum that contains this information. And that particular department will have to conduct its own status review. We are not being onerous or burdensome to other departments that are in possession of this document, and I alluded to the fact earlier to say that there will be no obligation on the National Archives or any other department that is in possession of the document. So it's, as you say, the onus is on the organ of state to actually know what documents are before the courts, and it's, unless the department is constantly at court on classified information, then you have to do a status review. That's, we have enabled organs of state and we give them criteria and guidelines for them to apply it. We are not putting forth a bill that is just going to be beneficial to the state, but it also gives them an onus to be competent to actually do the status review, look at what documents are before the courts, where, which other government departments they interact with. They need to start tracing these documents, because if they are going to say that these are classified information, then you must be able to keep track of it, because there is a register that all these documents need to be put into. So it wouldn't be, what can I say, impractical or improbable that they can't do their status review. They will have to actually take it upon themselves.
Let's, for example, the Brasbourg report is classified as top secret. It legitimately lands up in court as a document that needs to be used in the proceedings, and the court has got, in terms of the bill, the powers to make certain directives regarding how that information or that document is to be dealt with. I think what the honourable member is asking now, where does that document slip? You know, becomes part of the court record. And I don't think this is the database that is envisaged in the bill. So where does that document sleep, given that the court is going to give it the necessary protection that it needs in terms of what is contained in the bill? But what procedures are here in the bill that is going to cover the safekeeping of that particular document? I think that's what the honourable member is trying to establish.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, with regards to that particular area, there is provisions for regulations that are going to be drafted. Now, these regulations will supplement the bill with the actual procedural aspects that relate to instances that Honourable Member has mentioned. So, if you are going to cater for every possible type of situation, the bill will unfortunately be very thick and become more cumbersome to read. So we are going to look at regulations for these particular areas, which, as we have mentioned, is going to supplement that. We can also look at the possibility of the National Information Security Standards, where we can incorporate a guideline which will dictate the current documents that's before the enactment of this bill. Or we can also look at, maybe we can insert it at the transitional phase, but we can incorporate it in the National Information Security Standard or in the regulation. So that's what we can deal with it.
But, I mean, you do understand our concern is that there are a number of operators in the court, you know, not just the judge or the magistrate, there's a prosecutor, and there are copies of these documents. But the answer is, Honourable Member, that it's going to have to be regulated. Can we hear the Honourable Mayor then, and then the Honourable Fadeko?
Thank you, Chair. I have questions relating to sections 15, 25, and 29. Let me start with section 15, which deals with classification levels. We've dealt with contingent concepts in previous meetings, and we've discussed the fact that some contingent concepts like national interest are broad. Let me put that aside. Also, it seems to me that some of the contingent concepts we use in describing the classification levels are inconsistent. Let me give an example. A classification of confidential is contingent on a concept of harm or harmful, security, and national interest. A classification level of secret is contingent not on a concept of harm, but on a concept of in danger or endangerment, and then on security and national interest. And then a classification level of top secret is once again contingent on a concept of harm and of national interest, but not of security. I wondered if the drafters could talk to those and explain those inconsistencies in describing the various classification levels. That's section 15. Section 25 deals with appeals in respect of the status review. The section 25 deals with an appeal. That appeal in respect of the status review would be directed to a minister. And so is my conclusion that that appeal would therefore not be A, external, or B, independent, be correct? The third is section 29, which deals with the National Declassification Database. And perhaps just to pick up on a point that I made previously, the bill provides for the establishment of a National Declassification Database. That presumably deals with classified documents in respect of at least 140 organs of state, and yet on page 28 of the bill we are told that there are no financial implications of this bill. How is that possible? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, if you look at section 17 of the bill on page 14, section 17B, it sets out grievance that will not be acceptable to classified documentation. I don't think any of us have a problem with that. But practically, if you look at, and also at 15, on page 15, still section 17.2, practically if you look at what is said there, it is said that also that authorized officials, in order to fulfill law enforcement or intelligence functions, authorities, they won't be prohibited by it. I want to try and find out on a practical manner. What would be the consequences? Let's, for instance, take an example. Let's say a portfolio committee is busy with a budget review. During this budget review, they pick up on some or other irregularity in the department. Let's say it's forensics, just to complicate the matter a little bit more. Let's say it's forensics. So there can be an argument that what you are asking for, further information that you're asking for, can be sensitive information. It might be on the operational side of the forensic laboratory, or et cetera, et cetera. The department then comes back. I mean, this is now all just hypothetical. The department comes back, they say, no, we can't give you this information because it's classified. Now the committee's got a dispute with the department. For me, the time that it will take to resolve that dispute is also of importance. Because yes, there is a process. And yes, if somebody did classify that information, wrongly so, in order to protect themselves, to make sure that they're not embarrassed, etc., there will be consequences. But this very committee who has started the process, their work can be delayed, can be stopped, can be hampered by the time that it will take to resolve this issue. Can you just somehow, what is the protection that is given to Parliament, specifically to committees, if they should touch on something that would otherwise be seen as sensitive, as protected information, etc., etc.?
in Parliament's constitutional obligation of oversight.
Thank you, Chair. If I can deal with the last question and I'll deal with the rest. That is a practical situation that will arise. Now, just for clarity, I just want to establish that, say, for example, the committee or the forensic report that has been conducted contains these so-called classified methodologies. But in the same vein, it's trying to cover up a material irregularity. Now, there is going to be a process in terms of this. I think when we look at the processes that we need to develop in terms of our national information security standards to deal with these types of messes, especially when there is a type of a conflict, we have to look at what is the overriding factor. Now, there are overriding factors here where you look at is it going to be detrimental to the state and the national interest? But we have to weigh, that's where we talk about the balance of it. But with the procedural aspects of how to deal with it practically, it still needs to be developed in terms of the national information security standard. But I do understand you say that it's the time frames incorporated into this, it's 30 and 60 days, and collectively it's going to be 120 to 60 days. But practically, it's going to be a long time. And with government departments, there are protocol and procedures that you need to follow. So that is why we have to give that reasonable time for them to actually assess the merits of that matter. So we have to actually look at how to address this issue in the national information security standards, which will be supplemented by the regulations. But I think there are grounds of balancing out that conflicted area that you are talking about. Whether the information that is being done at the forensic part of it and parliamentary committees, we have to look at who has the overriding say in this matter. But I still need to reconsider that. I need some time to go back, and I will respond to you in the appropriate and use other examples at the next engagement.
Not that I think it needs to be answered now, but if it can, whether Parliament's obligations on oversight have been taken in consideration sufficiently in the drafting of this bill. I think it's a broader question. Forensic, I'm using forensic laboratories as an example because it's an actual case in front of us. But we don't have a problem accessing the information at this stage. But with this bill, you might have the somebody trying to cover up. So that's why I'm asking you that question.
Well, may, if you want to get involved in this discussion, but your questions haven't been answered yet. But, okay, Mr. Angelo Mania wants to, and then we'll go to the Angelo Cabadelli.
To build on this point and to sketch another hypothetical scenario, would my interpretation be correct in terms of section 18 of the bill, that if, for example, a chairperson of a parliamentary committee received a document in his or her pigeonhole that was a classified document and that exposed major or misconduct or corruption within the state, would that chairperson then, in terms of section 18 of the bill, have an obligation, in fact, to report and return that document to the state? And what are the implications, again, for Parliament's role in scrutinizing and overseeing the executive?
Just hold on now. Honorable Mugabadeli, do you want to put your question first? Can we first get the answers so that the presenters don't get lost in the questions? Let's get the answers first and then we'll take the question from the Honorable Mugabadeli.
Thank you, Chair. Section 18 will apply to any person, irrespective of the capacity, because if you mention that it's a chairperson of a committee, he will send it to the appropriate SEPs or the agency. But there are other mechanisms for him to say that, listen, this has come to my knowledge, you need to go to the agency or the SEPs and inform them that this document has come to my knowledge, I'm returning it because I'm not supposed to have sight of this. But then you also have a balancing mechanism in if the chairperson is a top secret clearance, then that person is lawfully entitled to have that particular document. So
you're not going to argue with the man.
Chair, I wanted to make the point that the scenario I had in mind would be a scenario with an ordinary working committee in Parliament where the chairperson would not have a security clearance. I mean, given your explanation, I would conclude that the implications of Section 18 of this bill, in the scenario that I've described, is in fact would spell the end of proper scrutiny and oversight in Parliament.
Wrong opinions, Honourable Mania, but I don't. No, I say you've got strong opinions, but I don't think it's a question. So let the presenter answer some of your other questions and then we can get on to the Honourable Mugabadeli.
Chair, with regard to the establishment of the national declassification base and the cost implications, as you would see that when we have looked at the cost implications, we looked at it from the perspective of the agency, of the ministry, but you look at the responsibilities of the National Archives to establish this declassification base. So unfortunately, I'm not in a position to answer the actual financial implications of this matter. And the Honourable Member did request that areas of this will be addressed by the Minister. With regard to the status review, which is the status review procedure is said. Yes, you are quite correct to say that it is the minister. There's no external or independent person. If you go back to the other section, you say that it doesn't preclude anybody from going to an ordinary court of law to appeal this particular aspect. Your laws of general applicability will also apply. If you are dissatisfied with that particular option, then you go to Chapter 12, which will relate to this particular area. With regard to the contingent concepts and the classification levels or the inconsistencies of it, we have to look at these concepts which we're currently being applied. And I think from our initial engagement, there was agreement that this contingent concept will not be discussed during our briefing session because we are not in position to actually give an informed decision and affect what needs to be deliberated on by the committee. This is our stance on how we looked at the matter as the drafters in the ministry. This will be up to the committee to either accept it or deliberate on these particular matters. But what I can do is I can share on the state information to be classified if the information is sensitive information, for, you were talking about harm and the inconsistencies between harm and unlawful disclosure that may be harmful, and then with secret information that would endanger the security of the national interest. Well, you look at when we were drafting this particular section, we looked at the state information which is secret, and we looked at, if you look at the structure, 15(1)(a) and B, it consists of 1A and B, 2 of A, B, and C, 3 will be A sub B with a sub Roman 1 and Roman 2 and a C. Because each level we decided to actually, as it goes up the order, we try to incorporate it to be, to look at what the international relations of the Republic. And if you look at the reading of it, I don't see anything wrong with it. If it's a conceptual issue, or if it doesn't cover what we are seeking out to do in the objects or the bill, then that's up to the committee to make a comment.
Covered the in Romania. Says it's, what he's saying is, it's, if you don't like it, you change it.
I like that.
Well, they,
I will change it.
Poland will have to change it, you know, that's their stance. The minister has taken a stance, that's what the three classifications is that they, what's the name, and clarifications.
I asked the question because my assumption is that when lawyers and particularly drafters of bills draft up bills, they choose their words very carefully. And I wanted to try to really get behind whether there was some significant difference between, for example, using a concept of harm as opposed to a concept of in danger. That's really what...
Is there an answer? Doesn't. You took your stance. Don't go and change it.
No. It's if we can respond to that at our next meeting, sure. Because we have to consult with the other members of the drafting team.
Okay, your question has been accepted. Can I just, Honourable Ketan Kabadeli? She has been waiting for some time. And then we will get to you on Bofika. The Honourable Gabriel.
Thank you, Chair. You know, this is freedom. This at our comment is really freedom. And I thank you for sharing it and the input. But it still remains, there's no bridge for me from this bill. There's no bridge between 1982, which I refer Old Testament, to now. You know, this chapter 9, release of declassified information to public, it's true, fine. But when it was classified, who classified it? If we're talking about the continuation of our country, who was classifying it? Who is now declassifying it? How does information get to the citizens that they are now declassified? Which will tally with 27.1 when you're saying classified information that is declassified may be made available to the public. But it looks like it's in the dark cupboard. Somewhere in the dark cupboard that is known only by the ones who were classified, the ones who decided to declassify it. Then how does it reach the public that this dark cupboard is now opened? Because there are documents, they were never classified by the owners, poems, books, but somebody classified them. And they were put somewhere, even in the archives, in whatever. How are we going to address that part? Where is the chapter or paragraph that is talking about this transition from Old Testament to now? So that you can really have those information going back to the public. So that you can begin to protect something that you all feel uniformly protecting it. Otherwise, my fear is that you are going to protect something that just benefits some other sector. how do you ensure all these issues, they fall under transformation? How do we ensure that there is fair transformation, that my quote that was taken in the form of information, I can now take it back and I can continue moving forward? Thank you.
You follow what the Honourable Member is saying, is that I think the first question the Honourable Member is putting, is there information coming from an era prior to our constitution that has classified information that still remains classified? I think that's what she's saying. And why is it remaining classified, and what's going to happen to that information? Are we just accepting that it remains classified? What? So the first thing is there, because if there isn't any information coming from the old order, or if that information is going to be automatically declassified, then I think the question, the answer is simple. But if it isn't, the Honourable Member wants to know, why are we moving from an old order and carrying this baggage with us and just going to classify it and putting it away? Am I correct there? Let's hear you on the board.
When a new government takes over, a new government, I expect that we review everything. Which means that I expect that our secret agents, intelligence commanders, should take all documents to the city, check them, and then start afresh on a new page. Because this is a new government, this is not a new government. Now, the point is, when you use categories, secret, confidential, and then you have got also a valuable information, which I believe categorize all of them as valuable information. If it's confidential, it's valuable information, it's state. If it's secret, it's valuable information, it's state. It's top secret, it's valuable.
Chair, I didn't get the last part of that question.
This information that is classified as top secret and confidential and secret, is all these things, is information all valuable information? Can they all be classified also as valuable information to be fall in the category of valuable information? Conversely, is it possible to have information classified as confidential, top secret or secret without it being valuable?
Thank you, Chair. Let me answer the one with the transfer to the archives. What was mentioned during the discussion of this particular matter is that even defunct government departments, their documents that are currently taken over by a different organization, they will be in charge of doing the status review procedure. Now, I think that most of the documents, I don't know if you are mentioning about documents that are currently in the National Archives that are currently not available to the general public. Is it that what we are trying to address?
Well, I think in terms of the general definition of information and intelligence, and we have got a host of documents that have come from the old order. Now, there can only be one reason why they're not made available to the public, and that is because they're classified for some category or the other. And I think what the Honourable Member is saying is that can continue. Now that you are busy with this law, when this thing comes into operation, is that, are those documents that are there now that has been classified in terms of a law, an old law which we're now having a problem with, are they going to be continued to be classified in terms of that old law that we are going to repeal? And are we now going to give that documents the same status that they had under the old law and continue to classify them? You know, forget what they are. You know, they might be useless documents, but what is going to be their status now, whether they're in archives or not?
Thank you, Chair. I think that what we have done is that we have made provision for that particular aspect where we have mentioned that classified records that are either held by the National Archives or any government department which have been classified for less than 20 years are subject to the provisions of this Act, meaning that our democracy is, we try to cover up that period. But it doesn't preclude you from using the other processes of requesting particular documents. And when you do request that document, the head of organ of state that is in control of it will then apply the procedures in this particular Act and then revert to you and say, fine, this document doesn't require the necessary classification and it will be given to you. And that's our submission.
I think there is a bigger problem there because you see it's not so much about there is information there which the public might be interested, individuals might be interested in getting, but it was unlawfully, in our mind now, classified in the old order. You know, in other words, it shouldn't have been classified. If there was a democratic order, it would not have been classified. And I think what the Honourable Member is having now is a problem that something that should never have been classified in the first place, but it was classified because it was the old order, now it remains classified and people would want to see it. What you're saying is that this the bill is giving this thing recognition. Yes, Honourable?
I think presenters are not forced to answer this thing now. They can go home, collect themselves as a team, put answers to this thing, because I'm telling you we can go forward as much as we can, but it will bring us back, because it's a lot of these documents, lot of this information that we don't know where it is, but it's classified where it is. That's why we were charged in courts, because we were charged for having done ABCD that was classified by a section of people. So we can't just say now we're declassifying it. Or we can say, but how are we going to know that? Where are they? How can we get them? Don't give the answers now, because this is a very crucial issue when you are sitting with the public. It's very crucial. Thank you.
No, I think, thank you very much for that concession, Honourable Member. Let's not force the presenters into what appears to be more political than a policy decision regarding, you know, there must have been policy considerations behind this thing, and perhaps these are not the right people to be answering that question. And I think, appreciate your concession there. Point of order, Honourable Member.
President. Our president, President Mandela, in America, he was classified as a terrorist for some time. He said it was only later that he was declassified as a terrorist. That's the importance of doing all this, of this classified documents.
Fine, Honourable Member. I think the point is taken. So let's leave that. Are there still unanswered questions? Everybody's been covered. No further questions. Friday, blue bulls and storms tomorrow. I know you don't want to be missing your flights and Let's see, I see you've been very quiet, and I know why. Honourable members, I think we're going to conclude. I think a very useful section, and as we go on, I think we're getting more comfortable with the bill. We're getting to understand one another also nicely where the areas of problems might lie. But thank you for coming, honourable members. I will write letters to the other honourable members that have not been here, even those that have apologised, and because we don't want to be leaving them behind too far. Otherwise, when they do come, we might find we have to travel through this, you know, this territory that we've just travelled all over again. So I will write to them and ask them to be more active. But thank you very much for coming, honourable members and visitors, those of you that are showing an interest. I'm sure that as we go on, we can get much more visitors, but we will give preference to those of you when it comes to shortage of seats. If you don't get a seat in the next session because there are too many additional visitors, put up your hand and I'll make sure that you get a seat because you have shown an interest and we will regard you as friends of the committee. Those latecomers will have to wait outside if the rooms are too full. Honourable members, thank you, and thank you, visitors. This meeting now stands adjourned. 201. M, next to your office. M for Mark's building. Yes. Yes. Thank you.